David. A few hours later, a pile of scrap metal stood in one corner of the clearing. Each segment of rail took an hour to get free and required all six of them to carry. The railroad ties sat in another pile. At least all the Smokies' wood didn't come from live trees. Tally couldn't believe how much they'd salvaged, literally tearing the track from the forest's grasp. She also couldn't believe her hands. They were red and raw, screaming with pain and covered with blisters.
"Looks pretty bad," David said, glancing over Tally's shoulder as she stared at them in amazement.
"Feels pretty bad," she said. "But I didn't notice until just now." David laughed.
"Hard work's a good distraction. But maybe you should take a break. I was just about to scout up the line for another spot to salvage. Want to come?"
"Sure," she said gratefully. The thought of picking up the power jack again made her hands throb. Leaving the others at the clearing, they hoverboarded up and over the gnarled trees, following the barely visible track below into dense forest. David rode low in the canopy, gracefully avoiding branches and vines, as if this were a familiar slalom course. Tally noticed that, like his shoes, his clothes were all handmade. City clothing only used seams and stitching for decoration, but David's jacket seemed to be cut together from a dozen patches of leather, all different shades and shapes. Its patchwork appearance reminded her of Frankenstein's monster, which led to a terrible thought. What if it were made of real leather? Like in the olden days. Skins. She shuddered. He couldn't be wearing a bunch of dead animals. They weren't savages here. And she had to admit that the coat fit him well, the leather following the line of his shoulders like an old friend. And it fended off the whips of branches better than her microfiber dorm jacket. David slowed as they came into a clearing, and Tally saw that they'd reached a wall of solid rock. "That's weird," she said. The railroad track seemed to plunge straight into the mountain, disappearing into a pile of boulders.
"The Rusties were serious about straight lines," David said. "When they built rails, they didn't like to go around stuff."
"So they just went through?" David nodded.
"Yeah, this used to be a tunnel, cut right into the mountain. It must have collapsed sometime after the Rusty Panic."
"Do you think there was anyone inside when it happened, I mean?"
"Probably not, but you never know. There could be a whole trainload of rusty skeletons in there."
Tally swallowed, trying to imagine whatever was in there, flattened and buried for centuries in the dark.
"The forest's a lot clearer around here," David said, "easier to work through. I'm just worried about these boulders collapsing if we start prying rails up."
"They look pretty solid."
"Oh, yeah? Check this out," David said.
He stepped off his board onto a boulder and deftly climbed to a spot that lay shadowed in the setting sun. Tally angled her board closer and jumped onto a large rock next to David. When her eyes adjusted to the darkness, she saw that a long space extended back between the boulders. David crawled inside, his feet disappearing into the darkness.
"Come on," his voice called.
There isn't really a trainload of dead Rusties in there, right?"
"Not that I've found, but today might be our lucky day."
Tally rolled her eyes and lowered herself onto her belly. She crawled inside, the cool weight of the rocks settling over her. A light flicked on ahead. She could see David sitting up in a small space, a flashlight glowing in his hand. She pulled herself in and took a seat next to him on a flat bit of rock. Giant shapes were stacked above them, so the tunnel didn't collapse completely.
Not at all. The rock cracked into pieces, some big and some small.
David pointed the flashlight down through a chink between where they sat. Tally squinted into the darkness and saw a much bigger open space below. A glint of metal revealed a segment of track.
Just think, if we could get down there, David said, we wouldn't have to pull up all those vines. All that track just waiting for us.
Just 100 tons of rock in the way is all. He nodded.
Yeah, but it would be worth it.
He pointed the flashlight upward at his face, making himself hideous.
No one's been down there for hundreds of years.
Great. Tally's skin tingled, her eyes picking out the dark fissures all around them. Maybe no human beings had been there for a long time, but lots of things like to live in cool, dark caves.
I keep thinking, David said, the whole thing might tumble open if we could just move the exact right boulder.
And not the exact wrong one, the one that makes the whole thing crush us? David laughed and pointed the flashlight so that it lit her face rather than his.
I thought you might say that.
Tally peered through the darkness, trying to make out his expression. What do you mean?
I can see that you're struggling with this.
Struggling? With what?
Being here in the smoke. You're not sure about it all.
Tally's skin tingled again, but not from the thought of snakes or bats or long-dead Rusties. She wondered if David had somehow already figured out she was a spy. No, I guess I'm not sure, she said evenly. She caught a glimmer of reflected light from David's eyes as he nodded.
That's good. You take this seriously. A lot of kids come out here and think it's all fun and games.
I don't think that for a minute, she said softly.
I can tell. It's not just a trick to you, like it is to most runaways. Even Shay, who really believes the operation is wrong, doesn't get how deadly serious the smoke is.
Tally didn't say anything. After a long moment of silence in the dark, David continued,
"It's dangerous out here. The cities are like these boulders. They may seem solid, but if you start messing with them, the whole pile could crumble."
I think I know what you mean, Tally said. Since the day she'd gone to get her operation, she'd felt the massive weight of the city looming over her and had learned firsthand how much places like the smoke threatened people like Dr. Cable. But I don't really understand why they care so much about you guys.
It's a long story, but part of it is...
She waited for a moment before saying, "Is what?"
Well, this is a secret. I don't usually tell people until they've been here for a while. Years. But you seem serious enough to handle it.
You can trust me, Tally said.
Then immediately wondered why.
She was a spy, an infiltrator. She was the last person David should trust.
I hope I can, Tally, he said.
reaching out to her.
Feel the palm of my hand.
She took it, running her fingers over the flesh. It was as rough as the wood grain of the table in the dining hall. The skin along his thumb as hard and dry as leather, cracking with age. No wonder he could work all day and not complain. Wow! How long does it take to get calluses like that?
About 18 years.
About... She stopped in disbelief, then compared the horn of his palm with her own tender, blistered flesh. Tally could feel it there, the grueling afternoon of real work she'd put in today, but stretched across a lifetime. But how?
I'm not a runaway, Tally.
I don't understand.
My parents were runaways, not me.
Oh. She felt stupid now, but it had never once occurred to her. If you could live in the smoke, you could raise children here, too. But she hadn't seen any Litleys, and the whole place seemed so tenuous, so temporary. It would be like having a child on a camping trip. How did they manage? Without any doctors, I mean.
They're doctors.
Huh? But hang on. Doctors? How old were they when they ran away?
Old enough. They weren't uglies anymore. I think it's called being a middle pretty.
Yeah, at least. New pretties worked or studied if they wanted to, but few people got serious about a profession until their middle years. Wait, what do you mean they weren't uglies?
They weren't, but they are now.
Tally tried to get her mind to process his words. You mean they never did the third operation? They still look middle, even though they're crumblies?
No, Tally, I told you. They're doctors.
A shock ran through her. This was more stunning than the felled trees or the cruel pretties. As overwhelming as anything she'd felt since Paris had gone away. They reversed the operation?
Yes.
They cut each other? Out here in the wild? To make themselves... Her throat closed on the word, as if she was going to gag.
No, they didn't use surgery.
Suddenly the dark cave seemed to be crushing her, squeezing the air from her chest. Tally forced herself to breathe. David pulled his hand away, and with a corner of her panicked mind, Tally realized she'd held on to it all that time.
I shouldn't have told you all this.
No, David, I'm sorry. I didn't mean to get all hyperventilated.
It's my fault. You just got here and I dumped all this on you.
But I do want you to... She fought saying it, but lost. To trust me. To tell me this stuff. I do take it seriously. That much was true.
Sure, Tally, but maybe that's enough for now. We should get back.
He turned and crawled toward the sunlight. As she followed, Tally thought of what David had said about the boulders. However massive, they were ready to topple you if you pushed them the wrong way. Ready to crush you. She felt the pendant swinging from her neck, a tiny but insistent pull. Dr. Cable would be impatient by now, waiting for the signal. But David's revelation had suddenly made everything much more complicated. The smoke wasn't just a hideout for assorted runaways, she realized now. It was a real town, a city in its own right, If Tally activated the tracker, it wouldn't just mean the end of Shay's big adventure. It would be David's home taken from him, his whole life stripped away. Tally felt the weight of the mountain pressing down upon her and found that she was still struggling to breathe as she pulled herself out into the sunlight.
Heartthrob. Around the fire at dinner that night, Tally told the story of how she'd hidden in the river when the Ranger's helicopter first appeared. She had everyone wide-eyed again. Apparently, she'd had one of the more exciting journeys to the smoke. "Can you imagine? I'm naked and crouching down in the water, and this rusty machine is destroying my camp."
"Why didn't they land?" Asterix asked. "Didn't they see your stuff?"
"I thought they did."
"The Rangers only pick up uglies in the white flowers," David explained. "That's the rendezvous spot we tell runaways to use. They can't just pick up anyone, or they might accidentally bring a spy here."
"I guess you wouldn't want that," Tally said softly.
"Still, they should be more careful with those helicopters," Shay said. "Someone's going to get chopped to pieces one day."
"Tell me about it. The wind almost took my hoverboard away," Tally said. "It lifted my sleeping bag right off the ground and up into the blades. It was totally shredded."
She was pleased by the amazement on the faces of her audience.
"So, where'd you sleep?" Croy asked.
"It wasn't that bad. It was only for..."
Tally stopped herself just in time. She'd spent one night without the sleeping bag, but in her cover story, she'd spent 4 days in the orchids.
"It was warm enough."
"You'd better get a new one before bedtime," David said. "It's a lot colder up here than down in the weeds."
"I'll take her over to the trading post," Shay said. "It's like a requisition center, Tally. Only when you get something, you have to leave something else behind as payment."
Tally shifted uncomfortably in her seat. She still hadn't gotten used to the idea that you had to pay for things here.
"All I've got is Spagbol."
Shay smiled. "That's perfect to trade with. We can't make dehydrated food here, except fruit, and traveling with regular food is a total pain. Spagbol's good as gold."
After dinner, Shay took her to a large hut near the center of town. The shelves were full of things made in the smoke, along with a few objects that had come from the cities. The city-made stuff was mostly shabby and worn, repaired again and again, but the handmade things fascinated Tally. She ran her still raw fingers across the clay pots and wooden tools, amazed at how each had its own texture and weight. Everything seemed so heavy and serious. An older ugly was running the place, but he wasn't as scary as the boss. He brought out woolen gear and a few silvery sleeping bags. The blankets, scarves, and gloves were beautiful, in subdued colors and simple patterns. But Shay insisted that Tally get a city-made sleeping bag.
"Much lighter, and it squishes up small. Much better for when we go exploring."
"Of course," Tally said, trying to smile. "That'll be great."
She wound up trading 12 packets of Spagbol for another sleeping bag and 6 for a handmade sweater, which left her with 8. She couldn't believe that the sweater, brown with bands of pale red and green highlights,
cost half as much as the sleeping bag, which was threadbare and patched.
"You're just lucky you didn't lose your water purifier," Shay said as they walked home. "Those things are impossible to trade for."
Tally's eyes widened. "What happens if they break?"
"Well, they say you can drink water from the streams without purifying it."
"You're kidding."
"Nope. A lot of the older Smokies do," Shay said. "Even if they've got a purifier, they don't bother."
"Yuck,"
Shay giggled. "Yeah, no kidding. But hey, you can always use mine."
Tally put a hand on Shay's shoulder. "Same goes for mine." Shay's pace slowed.
"Tally?"
"Yeah?"
"You were going to say something to me back in the library before the boss started yelling at you?"
Tally's stomach sank. She pulled away, her fingers automatically going to the pendant at her neck.
"Yeah," Shay said. "About that necklace?"
Tally nodded, but didn't know how to start. She still hadn't activated the pendant, and since her conversation with David, she wasn't sure she could. Maybe if she returned to the city in a month, starving and empty-handed, Dr. Cable would take mercy on her. But what if the woman kept her promise, and Tally never got the operation? In 20-something years, she would be lined and wrinkled, as ugly as the boss, an outcast. And if she stayed here in the smoke, she'd be sleeping in an old sleeping bag and dreading the day her water purifier broke down. She was so tired of lying to everyone. "I haven't told you everything," she started.
"I know, but I think I've got it figured out."
Tally looked at her friend, afraid to speak.
"I mean, it's pretty obvious, right? You're all upset because you broke your promise to me. You didn't keep the smoke a secret."
Tally's mouth fell open. Shay smiled, taking her hand.
"As you got closer to your birthday, you decided you wanted to run away. But in the meantime, you met someone important, the same someone who gave you that heart necklace. So you broke your promise to me. You told that someone where you were going."
Kind of, Tally managed.
Shay giggled. "I knew it. That's why you've been all nervous. You want to be here, but you also wish you were somewhere else, with someone else. And before you ran away, you left directions, a copy of my note, in case your new heartthrob wants to join us. Am I right or am I right?"
Tally bit her lip. Shay's face glowed in the moonlight, obviously thrilled with herself for figuring out Tally's big secret.
You're partly right." "Oh, Tally," Shay grabbed both her shoulders. "Don't you see that it's okay? I mean, I did the same thing."
Tally frowned. "What do you mean?"
"I wasn't supposed to tell anyone I was coming here. David made me promise I wouldn't even tell you."
"Why?"
Shay nodded. "He hadn't met you and wasn't sure if he could trust you. Normally, runaways only recruit old friends, people they've tricked with for years. But I'd only known you since the beginning of summer, and I never once mentioned the smoke to you until the day before I left. I was never brave enough, in case you said no."
"So you weren't supposed to tell me?"
"No way. So when you actually showed up, it made everyone nervous. They don't know whether they can trust you. Even David's been acting weird around me."
"Shay, I'm so sorry," It's not your fault.
Shay shook her head vigorously. It's mine. I screwed everything up.
But so what? Once they get to know you, they'll think you're really cool.
Yeah, Tally said softly. Everyone's been really nice. She wished she'd activated the pendant the moment she'd gotten here. In only one day, she'd begun to realize that it wasn't just Shay's dream she'd be betraying. Hundreds of people had made a life in the smoke.
"And I'm sure your someone will be cool, too," Shay said. "I can't wait till we're all together."
"I don't know if that's going to happen." There had to be some other way out of the situation. Maybe if she went to another city, or found the Rangers again and told them that she wanted to volunteer, they'd make her pretty. But she hardly knew anything about their city, except that she didn't know anyone there.
Shay shrugged. "Maybe not, but I wasn't sure you'd come either."
She squeezed Tally's hand.
"I'm really glad you did, though."
Tally tried to smile. "Even though I got you into trouble?"
"It's not such a big deal. I think everyone's way too paranoid around here. They spend all this time disguising the place so satellites can't see it, and they mask the handphone transmissions so they won't be intercepted. And all the secrecy about runaways is way overdone. And dangerous. Just think, if you hadn't been smart enough to figure out my directions, you could be halfway to Alaska by now."
"I don't know, Shay. Maybe they know what they're doing. The city authorities can be pretty tough."
Shay laughed. "Don't tell me you believe in special circumstances."
Tally closed her eyes. "I just think that the Smokies have to be careful."
"Okay, sure. I'm not saying we should advertise. But if people like you and me want to come out here and live differently, why shouldn't we? I mean, no one has the right to tell us we have to be pretty, right?"
"Maybe they're just worried because we're kids. You know?"
"That's the problem with the cities, Tally. Everyone's a kid, pampered and dependent and pretty. Just like they say in school, big-eyed means vulnerable. Well, like you once told me, you have to grow up sometime."
Tally nodded. "I know what you mean, how the uglies here are more grown up. You can see it in their faces."
Shay pulled Tally to a stop and looked at her closely for a second. "You feel guilty, don't you?"
Tally looked back into Shay's eyes, speechless for a moment. She suddenly felt naked in the cold night air, as if Shay could see straight through her lies.
"What?" she managed. "Guilty. Not just that you told your someone about the smoke, but that they might actually come. Now that you've seen the smoke, you're not sure if that was such a good idea."
Shay sighed.
"I know it seems weird at first, and it's a lot of hard work, but I think you'll eventually like it."
Tally looked down, feeling tears welling in her eyes. "It's not that. Well, maybe it is. I just don't know if I can..." Her throat felt too full to speak. If she said another word, she'd have to tell Shay the truth, that she was a spy, a traitor sent there to destroy everything around them. And that Shay was the fool who'd led her there.
"Hey, it's okay."
Shay gathered Tally in her arms,
rocking her gently as Tally began to cry.
"I'm sorry. I didn't mean to unload everything on you at once, but I felt kind of distant from you since you got here. It feels like you're not sure you want to look at me."
"I should tell you everything."
"Shh." Tally felt Shay's fingers stroking her hair. "I'm just glad you're here."
Tally let herself cry, burying her face in the scratchy wool sleeve of her new sweater, feeling Shay's warmth against her and feeling awful about every gesture of kindness from her friend. With half her mind, Tally was actually glad she'd come and seen all this. She could have lived her whole life in the city and never seen this much of the world. With the other half, Tally still wished she'd activated the pendant the moment she'd arrived in the smoke. It would have been so much easier that way. But there was no way back in time now. She had to decide whether to betray the smoke or not, completely understanding what it would do to Shay, to David, to everyone here.
"It's okay, Tally," Shay murmured. "You'll be okay."
Suspicion. As the days passed, Tally fell into the routines of the smoke. There was something comforting about the exhaustion of hard work. All her life, Tally had been troubled by insomnia, lying awake most nights thinking about arguments she'd had or wanted to have or things she should have done differently. But here in the smoke, her mind shut off the moment her head hit the pillow, which wasn't even a pillow, just her new sweater stuffed into a cotton bag. Tally still didn't know how long she was going to stay there. She hadn't come to a decision about whether to activate the pendant, but she knew that thinking about it all the time would drive her crazy. So she decided to put it out of her mind. One day she might wake up and realize that she couldn't stand to live her entire life as an ugly, no matter who it hurt or what it cost. But for the moment, Dr. Cable could wait. Forgetting her troubles was easy in the smoke. Life was much more intense than in the city. She bathed in a river so cold that she had to jump in screaming. And she ate food pulled from the fire hot enough to burn her tongue, which city food never did. Of course, she missed shampoo that didn't sting her eyes, and flush toilets. She'd learned to her horror what latrines were, and mostly med spray. But however blistered her hands became, Tally felt stronger than ever before. She could work all day at the railroad site, then race David and Shay home on hoverboards. Her backpack full of more scrap metal than she could have lifted a month before. She learned from David how to repair her clothes with a needle and thread, how to tell raptors from their prey, and even how to clean fish, which turned out to be not nearly as bad as cutting them up in bio class. The physical beauty of the smoke also cleared her mind of worries. Every day seemed to change the mountain, the sky, and the surrounding valleys, making them spectacular in a completely new way. Nature, at least, didn't need an operation to be beautiful. It just was. One morning, on the way to the railroad track, David pulled his board up alongside Tally's. He rode silently for a while, taking the familiar turns with his usual grace. Over the last 2 weeks, she'd learned that his jacket was actually made of leather, real dead animals. But she'd gradually gotten used to the idea. The Smokies hunted, but they were like the Rangers, killing only species that didn't belong in this part of the world, or that had gotten out of control thanks to the Rusties meddling. With its random patches, the jacket would probably look silly on anyone else. But it suited David somehow, as if growing up here in the wild allowed him to fuse with the animals that had donated their skins to his clothes. And it probably didn't hurt that he'd actually made the jacket himself. He spoke up suddenly.
"I've got a present for you."
"A present? Really?" By now, Tally understood that nothing in the smoke ever lost its value. Nothing was discarded or given away just because it was old or broken. Everything was repaired, refitted, and recycled. And if one Smokey couldn't put it to use, it was traded to another. Few things were given away lightly.
"Yeah, really?"
David angled closer and handed her a small bundle. She unwrapped it, following the familiar route down the stream almost without looking. It was a pair of gloves, handmade in light brown leather. She shoved the bright city-made wrapping paper into her pocket, then pulled the gloves onto her blistered hands. "Thanks! They fit perfectly!" He nodded.
"I made them when I was about your age. They're a little small for me these days."
Tally smiled, wishing she could hug him. When they spread their arms to take a hard turn, she held his hand for a second. Flexing her fingers, Tally found that the gloves were soft and pliant, the palms worn pale from years of use. White lines across the finger joints revealed how they'd fitted David's hands. "They're wonderful."
"Come on," David said. "It's not like they're magic or anything."
"No, but they've got something." History, Tally realized. In the city, she'd owned lots of things. Practically anything she wanted came out of the wall. But city things were disposable and replaceable, as interchangeable as the T-shirt, jacket, and skirt combinations of dorm uniforms. Here, in the smoke, objects grew old, carrying their histories with them in dings and scratches and tatters. David chuckled at her and sped up, joining Shay at the front of the pack. When they got to the railroad site, David announced that they had to clear more track, using vibrosaws to cut through the vegetation that had grown up around the metal rails.
"What about the trees?"
Croy asked.
"What about them?
Do we have to chop them down?" Tally asked. David shrugged.
"Scrub trees like this aren't good for much, but we won't waste them. We'll take them back to the smoke for burning."
"Burning?" Tally said. The Smokies usually only cut down trees from the valley, not the rest of the mountain. These trees had been growing there for decades, and David wanted to use them just to cook a meal? She looked at Shay for support, but her friend's expression was carefully neutral. She probably agreed, but didn't want to argue with David in front of everyone about how to run his project.
"Yes, burning," he said, "and after we've salvaged the track, we'll replant. Put a row of useful trees where the railroad used to be."
The five others looked at him silently. He spun a saw in his hand, anxious to get started, but aware he didn't have their full support yet.
"You know, David," Croy said,
These trees aren't useless. They protect the underbrush from sunlight, which keeps the soil from eroding.
Okay, you win. Instead of planting some other kind of tree, we'll let the forest take back the land. All the crappy scrub and underbrush you want.
But do we have to clear-cut them? Asterix asked. David took a slow breath. Clear-cutting was the word for what the Rusties had done to the old forests. Felling every tree, killing every living thing, turning entire countries into grazing land. Whole rainforests had been consumed, reduced from millions of interlocking species to a bunch of cows eating grass. A vast web of life traded for cheap hamburgers.
Look, we're not clear-cutting. All we're doing is pulling out the garbage that the Rusties left behind, David said. It just takes a little surgery to do it.
We could chop around the trees, Tally said. Only cut into them where we need to. Like you said, surgery.
Okay, fine, he chuckled. Let's see what you think of these trees after you've had to hack a few out of the ground.
He was right. The vibrosaw purred through heavy vines, parted tangled underbrush like a comb through wet hair, and sliced cleanly through metal when the odd misstroke brought the cutting edge down onto the track. But when its teeth met the gnarled roots and twisted branches of the scrub trees, it was a different story. Tally grimaced as her saw bounced across the hard wood again, spitting bits of bark at her face, its low hum transformed into a protesting howl. She struggled to force the edge down into the tough old branch. One more cut, and this section of track would be clear.
Going good. You almost got it, Tally.
She noticed that Croy stood well back, poised to jump if the saw somehow slipped from her hands. She could see now why David had wanted to chop the scrub trees into pieces. It would have been a lot easier than reaching through the tangle of roots and branches, trying to bring the vibrosaw to bear against a precise spot. "Stupid trees," Tally muttered, gritting her teeth as she plunged the blade down again. Finally, the saw found purchase in the wood, letting out a high-pitched scream as it bit into the branch. Then it slipped through, free for a second, before it thrust, spitting and screeching, into the dirt below.
Yeah!
Tally stepped back, lifting her goggles, the saw powering down in her hands. Croy stepped forward and kicked the section of branch away from the track.
Perfect surgical slice, doctor, he said.
I think I'm getting the hang of this, Tally said, wiping her brow. It was almost noon, and the sun was beating down into the clearing mercilessly. She pulled off her sweater, realizing that the morning chill was long gone. You were right about the trees giving shade.
You said it, Croy said. Nice sweater, by the way.
She smiled. Along with her new gloves, it was her prized possession. Thanks.
What did it cost you?
6 spag bowls.
A little pricey. Pretty, though.
Croy caught her eye.
Tally, remember that first day you got here, when I kind of grabbed your knapsack? I really wouldn't have taken your stuff. Not without giving you something for it. You just surprised me when you said I could have everything.
Sure, no problem, she said. Now that she'd worked with Croy, he seemed like a nice enough guy. She'd rather have been teamed up with David or Shay, but those two were cutting together today, and it was probably time she got to know some of the other Smokies better. And you got a new sleeping bag, too, I hope.
Yeah, 12 spag bowls.
Must be almost out of trade.
She nodded. Only 8 left.
Not bad. Still, I bet you didn't realize on your way here that you were eating your future wealth.
Tally laughed. They crouched under the partly cut tree, pulling handfuls of cut vines from around the track. If I'd known how valuable food packets were, I probably wouldn't have eaten so many, starving or not. I don't even like it anymore. The worst was spag bowl for breakfast.
Sounds good to me, Croy chuckled. This section look clear to you?
Sure. Let's start on the next one. She handed him the saw. Croy did the easy part first, attacking the underbrush with the humming saw.
So, Tally, there's one thing that's kind of confusing.
What's that? The saw glanced off metal, sending up a smattering of sparks.
The first day you were here, you said you left the city with 2 weeks of food.
Yeah?
If it took you 9 days to get here, you should only have had 5 days of food left. Maybe 15 packets altogether. But I remember on that first day when I looked into your bag, I was like, she's got tons.
Tally swallowed, trying not to show any expression.
And it turns out I was right. 12 plus 6 plus 8 is 26?
Yeah, I guess. He nodded, working the saw carefully beneath a low branch.
I thought so. But you left the city before your birthday, right?
Tally thought fast. Sure, but I guess I didn't really eat 3 meals every day, Croy. Like I said, I was pretty sick of spag bowl after a while.
Seems like you didn't eat much at all for such a long trip.
Tally struggled to do the math in her head, to figure out what sort of numbers would add up. She remembered what Shay had said that first night. Some Smokies were suspicious of her, worried that she might be a spy. Tally had thought they all accepted her by now. Apparently not. She took a deep breath, trying to keep the fear out of her voice. Look, Croy, let me tell you something. A secret.
What's that?
I probably left the city with more than just 2 weeks' worth of food. I never really counted.
But you kept saying,
yeah, I might have exaggerated a little, just to make the trip sound more interesting, you know? Like I could have run out of food when the Rangers didn't turn up. But you're right. I always had plenty.
Sure.
He looked up at her, smiling gently.
I thought maybe so. Your trip did sound a little bit too interesting to be true.
But most of what I said was...
Of course.
The saw whined to a stop in his hand.
I'm sure most of it was. Question is, how much?
Tally met his piercing eyes, struggling to think of what to say. It was nothing but a few extra food packets, hardly proof that she was a spy. She should just laugh it off. But the fact that he was dead right silenced her.
You want the saw for a while?
He said mildly.
Clearing this up is hard work.
Since they were clearing brush, there was no load of metal to take back at midday, so the railroad crew had brought their lunch out with them,
potato soup and bread with salty olives dotted through it. Tally was glad when Shay took her lunch away from the rest of the group to the edge of the dense forest. She followed, settling next to her friend in the dappled light.
"I need to talk to you, Shay."
Shay, not looking at her, sighed softly as she tore her bread into pieces.
"Yeah, I guess you do." "Oh, did he talk to you, too?"
Shay shook her head.
"He didn't have to say anything."
Tally frowned. "What do you mean?"
"I mean it's obvious. Ever since you got here, I should have seen it right away."
"I never..." Tally started, but her voice betrayed her.
"What are you saying? You think Croy's right?"
Shay sighed.
"I'm just saying that..."
She stopped and turned to face Tally.
"Croy? What about Croy?"
"He was talking to me before lunch, and he noticed my sweater and asked if I got a sleeping bag. And he figured that after 9 days getting here, I had too much spag bowl left."
"You had too much what?"
Shay's expression was one of total confusion.
"What on earth are you talking about?"
"Remember when I got here, I told everyone that..." Tally trailed off, for the first time noticing Shay's eyes. They were lined with red, as if she hadn't slept.
"Wait a second. What did you think I was talking about?"
Shay held out a hand, fingers splayed.
"This."
"What?"
"Hold out yours."
Tally opened one hand, making a mirror image of Shay's.
"Same size," Shay said.
She turned both her palms up.
"Same blisters, too."
Tally looked down and blinked. If anything, Shay's hands were in worse shape, red and dry and cracked with the ragged edges of burst blisters. Shay always worked so hard, diving in first, always taking the hardest jobs. Tally's fingers went to the gloves tucked into her belt.
"Shay, I'm sure David didn't mean to..." "I'm sure he did. People always think long and hard about gifts in the smoke."
Tally bit her lip. It was true. She pulled the gloves from her belt.
"You should take them. I don't want them."
Tally sat back, stunned. "First Croy, now this."
"No, I guess you don't."
She dropped the gloves. "But Shay, shouldn't you talk to David before you go nuts about this?"
Shay chewed at a fingernail, shaking her head. "He doesn't talk to me that much anymore. Not since you showed up. Not about anything important. He's got stuff on his mind, he says."
"Oh." Tally gritted her teeth. I like David, but..."
"It's not your fault, okay? I know that."
Shay reached out and gave Tally's heart-shaped pendant a little flick.
"And besides, maybe your mysterious someone will show up, and it won't matter anyway."
Tally nodded. True enough, once the specials got here, Shay's romantic life would be the least of anyone's worries.
"Have you ever mentioned that to David? It seems like it might be an issue."
"No, I haven't."
"Why not?"
"It just never came up."
Shay's mouth tightened. "That's convenient."
Tally let out a groan.
"But Shay, you said it yourself. I wasn't supposed to be giving out directions to the smoke. I feel really bad about the whole thing. I'm not going to go advertising it. except by wearing that thing around your neck. Which didn't do much good, though, since apparently David didn't notice it.
Tally sighed. Or maybe he doesn't care, because this is all just in your... She couldn't finish. It wasn't just in Shay's head. She could see it now, and feel it, too. When David showed her the railway cave and told her his secret about his parents, he trusted her, even when he shouldn't have. And now, this present, could it really be just Shay overreacting? In a quiet part of her mind, Tally realized that she hoped it wasn't.
She took a deep breath, expelling the thought.
Shay, what do you want me to do?
Just tell him.
Tell him what?
About why you wear that heart. About your mysterious someone.
Too late, Tally felt the expression on her face. Shay nodded.
You don't want to, do you? That's pretty clear.
No, I will, really.
Sure you will.
Shay turned away, pulling a hunk of bread from her soup and taking a vicious bite.
I will.
Tally touched her friend's shoulder, and instead of pulling away, Shay turned back to her, her expression almost hopeful. Tally swallowed.
I'll tell him everything. I promise. Bravery. That night at dinner, she ate alone. Now that she'd spent a day cutting trees herself, the wooden table in the dining hall no longer horrified her. The grain of wood felt reassuringly solid, and tracing its whorls with her eyes was easier than thinking. For the first time, Tally noticed the sameness of the food, bread again, stew again. A couple of days ago, Shay had explained that the plump meat in the stew was rabbit, not soy-based, like the dehydrated meat in her spag bowl, but real animals from the overcrowded pen on the edge of the smoke. The thought of rabbits being killed, skinned, and cooked suited her mood. Like the rest of her day, this meal tasted brutal and serious. Shay hadn't talked to her after lunch, and Tally had no idea what to say to Croy, so she'd worked the rest of the day in silence. Dr. Cable's pendant seemed to grow heavier and heavier, wound around her neck as tightly as the vines, brush, and roots grasping the railroad tracks. It felt as if everyone in the smoke could see what the necklace really was, a symbol of her treachery. Tally wondered if she could ever stay there now. Croy suspected what she was, and it seemed like it would be only a matter of time before everyone else knew. All day long, a terrible thought had kept crossing her mind. Maybe the smoke was where she really belonged. But she'd lost her chance by going there as a spy. And now, Tally'd come between David and Shay. Without even trying, she'd shafted her best friend. Like walking poison, she killed everything. She thought of the orchids spreading across the plains below, choking the life out of other plants, out of the soil itself, selfish and unstoppable. Tally Youngblood was a weed, and unlike the orchids, she wasn't even a pretty one. Just as she finished eating, David sat down across from her.
Hey.
Hi. She managed to smile. Despite everything, it was a relief to see him. Eating alone had reminded her of the days after her birthday, trapped as an ugly when everyone knew she should be pretty.
Today was the first time she'd felt like an ugly since coming to the smoke. David reached across and took her hand.
Tally, I'm sorry.
You're sorry? He turned her palm up to reveal her freshly blistered fingers.
I noticed you didn't wear the gloves, not after you had lunch with Shay. It wasn't hard to guess why.
Oh, yeah. It's not that I didn't like them. I just couldn't.
Sure, I know. This is all my fault.
He looked around the crowded hall.
Can we get out of here? I've got something to tell you.
Tally nodded, feeling the cold pendant against her neck and remembering her promise to Shay. Yeah, I've got something to tell you, too. They walked through the smoke, past cook fires being extinguished with shovelfuls of dirt, windows coming alight with candles and electric bulbs, and a handful of young uglies pursuing an escaped chicken. They climbed the ridge from which Tally had first looked down on the settlement, and David led her along it to a cool, flat outcrop of stone, where a view opened up between the trees. As always, Tally noticed how graceful David was, how he seemed to know every step of the path intimately. Not even pretties, whose bodies were perfectly balanced, designed for elegance in every kind of clothing, moved with such effortless control. Tally deliberately turned her eyes away from him. In the valley below, the orchids glowed with pale malevolence in the moonlight, a frozen sea against the dark shore of the forest. David started talking first.
Did you know you're the first runaway to come here all alone?
Really? He nodded, still staring down at the white expanse of flowers.
Most of the time, I bring them in.
Tally remembered Shay, the last night they'd seen each other in the city, saying that the mysterious David would take her to the smoke. Back then, Tally had hardly believed there was such a person. Now, sitting next to her, David seemed very real. He took the world more seriously than any other ugly she'd ever met. More seriously, in fact, than middle pretties like her parents. In a funny way, his eyes held the same intensity that the cruel pretties had, though without their coldness.
My mother used to in the old days, he said, but now she's too old.
Tally swallowed. They always explained in school about how uglies who didn't have the operations eventually became infirm.
Oh, I'm so sorry. How old is she, anyway?
He laughed.
She's plenty fit, but uglies have an easier time trusting someone like me, someone their own age.
Oh, of course.
Tally remembered her reaction to the boss that first day. Only a couple of weeks later, she was much more used to all the different kinds of faces that age created.
Sometimes a few uglies will make it on their own, following coded directions like you did. But it's always been three or four in a group. No one's ever come all alone.
You must think I'm an idiot.
Not at all.
He took her hand.
I think it was really brave.
She shrugged. It wasn't that bad a trip, really.
It's not the traveling that takes courage, Tally. I've done much longer trips on my own. It's leaving home.
He traced a line on her sore hand with a finger.
I can't imagine having to walk away from the smoke, away from everything I've ever known, realizing I'd probably never come back.
Tally swallowed. It hadn't been easy. Of course, she hadn't really had a choice.
But you left your city, the only place you'd ever lived, all alone, David continued. You hadn't even met a Smoky, someone to convince you firsthand that it was a real place. You did it all on trust, because your friend asked you. I guess that's why I feel I can trust you.
Tally looked out at the weeds, feeling worse with every word David said. If he only knew the real reason she was there.
When Shay first told me you were coming, I was really angry at her.
Because I might have given the smoke away?
Partly. And partly because it's really dangerous for a city-bred 16-year-old to cross hundreds of miles alone. But mostly I thought it was a wasted risk, because you probably wouldn't even make it out of your dorm window.
He looked up at her, squeezing her hand softly.
I was amazed when I saw you running down that hill.
Tally smiled.
I was a pretty sorry sight that day. You were so scratched up, your hair and clothes all singed from that fire. But you had the biggest smile on your face.
David's face seemed to glow in the soft moonlight. Tally closed her eyes and shook her head.
Great. She was going to get an award for bravery, when she should really be kicked out of the smoke for treachery. You don't look quite so happy now, though, he said softly.
Not everyone thinks it's great that I came here. He laughed.
Yeah, Croy told me about his big revelation.
He did? She opened her eyes.
Don't listen to him. From the moment you got here, he was suspicious about your coming alone. He thought you must have had help along the way, city help. But I told him he was crazy.
Thanks. He shrugged.
When you and Shay saw each other, you were so happy. I could tell that you'd really missed her.
Yeah, I was worried about her.
Of course you were. And you were brave enough to come looking yourself, even if it meant walking away from everything you'd ever known, alone. You didn't really come because you wanted to live in the smoke, did you?
What do you mean?
You came to see if Shay was all right.
Tally looked into David's eyes. Even if he was completely wrong about her, it felt good to bask in his words. Up until now, the whole day had been tainted by suspicion and doubt, but David's face shone with admiration for what she'd done. A feeling spread through her, a warmth that pushed away the cold wind cutting across the ridge. Then Tally trembled inside, realizing what the feeling was. It was that same warmth she'd felt talking to Paris after his operation, or when teachers looked at her with approval. It was not a feeling she'd ever gotten from an ugly before. Without large, perfectly shaped eyes, their faces couldn't make you feel that way. But the moonlight and the setting, or maybe just the words he was saying, had somehow turned David into a pretty. Just for a moment. But the magic was all based on lies. She didn't deserve to look in David's eyes. She turned to face the ocean of weeds again. I bet Shay wishes she never told me about the smoke.
Maybe right now, maybe for a while, David said, but not forever.
But you and she...
She and I.
He sighed.
Shay changes her mind pretty quickly, you know.
What do you mean?
The first time she wanted to come to the smoke was back in spring, when Croy and the others came.
She told me. She chickened out, right?
David nodded. I always figured she would. She just wanted to run away because her friends were. If she stayed in the city, she'd be left all alone.
Tally thought of her friendless days after Paris's operation. Yeah, I know that feeling.
But she never showed up that night. Which happens. I was really surprised to see her in the ruins a few weeks ago, suddenly convinced she wanted to leave the city forever. And she was already talking about bringing a friend, even though she hadn't said a word to you yet.
He shook his head.
I almost told her to just forget about it, to stay in the city and become pretty.
She took a deep breath. Everything would have been so much easier if David had done exactly that. Tally would be pretty right now, high up in a party tower with Paris and Shay and a bunch of new friends at this very moment. But the image in her mind didn't give Tally the thrill it usually did. It just fell flat, like a song she'd heard too many times. David squeezed her hand.
I'm glad I didn't.
Something made Tally say, "Me too." The words amazed her, because somehow they felt true.
She looked at David closely, and the feeling was still there. She could see that his forehead was too high, that a small scar cut a white stroke through his eyebrow. And his smile was pretty crooked, really. But it was as if something had changed inside Tally's head, something that had turned his face pretty to her. The warmth of his body cut the autumn chill, and she moved closer. Shay's tried hard to make up for chickening out that first time and for giving you directions when she promised me she wouldn't, he said. Now she's decided the smoke is the greatest place in the world and that I'm the best person in the world for bringing her here.
She really likes you, David,
and I really like her, but she's just not...
Not what?
Not... serious. Not
you. Tally turned away, her head swimming. She knew she had to keep her promise now, or she never would. Her fingers went to the pendant. David?
Yeah, I noticed that necklace. After your smile, it was the second thing I noticed about you.
You know someone gave it to me.
That's what I figured.
And I told them about the smoke. He nodded.
I figured that, too.
You're not mad at me?
He shrugged. You never promised me anything. I hadn't even met you.
But you still... David was gazing into her eyes, his face glowing again.
Tally looked away, trying to drown her uncanny pretty feelings in the sea of white weeds.
David sighed softly.
You left a lot of things behind when you came here. Your parents, your city, your whole life. And you're starting to like the smoke, I can tell. You get what we're doing here in a way that most runaways don't.
I like the way it feels here, but I might not stay. He smiled.
I know. Listen, I'm not rushing you. Maybe whoever gave you that heart is coming. Maybe not. Maybe you'll go back to them. But in the meantime... could you do something for me?
Sure. I mean, what?
He stood, offering her his hand.
I'd like you to meet my parents.
The Secret. They descended the ridge on the far side down a steep, narrow path. David led her quickly in the darkness, finding footing on the almost invisible trail without hesitation. It was all Tally could do to keep up. The whole day had been one shock after another. And now, to top it all off, she was going to meet David's parents. That was the last thing she'd expected after showing him her pendant and telling him she hadn't kept the smoke a secret. His reactions were different from those of anyone she'd ever met before. Maybe it was because he'd grown up out here, away from the customs of the city. Or maybe he was just different. They left the familiar ridgeline far behind, and the mountain rose steeply to one side. Your parents don't live in the smoke?
No, it's too dangerous.
Dangerous how?
It's part of what I was telling you your first day here, in the railroad cave.
About your secret? How you were raised in the wild?
David stopped for a moment, turning back to face her in the darkness.
There's more to it than that.
What?
I'll let them tell you. Come on.
A few minutes later, a small square filled with faint light appeared, hovering in the darkness of the mountainside. Tally saw that it was a window, a light inside glowing deep red through a closed curtain. The house seemed half buried, as if it had been wedged into the mountain. When they were still a stone's throw away, David stopped.
Don't want to surprise them. They can be jumpy, he said.
Then shouted,
Hello!
A moment later, a doorway opened, letting out a shaft of light.
David?
A woman's voice called. The door opened wider until the light spilled across them.
Az, it's David!
As they drew closer, Tally saw that she was an old ugly. Tally couldn't tell if she was younger or older than the boss, but she certainly wasn't as terrifying to look at. Her eyes flashed like a pretty's, and the lines of her face disappeared into a welcoming smile as she gathered her son into a hug.
Hi, Mom.
And you must be Tally.
Nice to meet you. She wondered if she should shake hands or something. In the city, you never spent much time with other uglies' parents, except when you hung out at friends' houses during school breaks. The house was much warmer than the bunkhouse, and the timber floors weren't nearly as rough, as if David's parents had lived there so long, their feet had worn them smooth. The house somehow felt more solid than any building in the smoke. It was really cut into the mountain, she saw now. One of the walls was exposed stone, glistening with some kind of transparent sealant.
Nice to meet you too, Tally, David's mother said.
Tally wondered what her name was. David always referred to them as Mom and Dad, words Tally hadn't used for Saul and Ellie since she was a littly. A man appeared, shaking David's hand before turning to her.
Good to meet you, Tally.
She blinked, her breath catching. For a moment, unable to speak. David and his father somehow looked alike.
It didn't make any sense. There had to be more than 30 years between them, if his father really had been a doctor when David was born. But their jaws, foreheads, even their slightly lopsided smiles were all so similar.
"Tally," David said.
"Sorry. You just... you look the same." David's parents burst into laughter, and Tally felt her face turning red.
"We get that a lot," his father said. "You city kids always find it a shock, but you know about genetics, don't you?"
"Sure, I know all about genes. I knew two sisters, uglies, who looked almost the same. But parents and children? That's just weird."
David's mother forced a serious expression onto her face, but the smile stayed in her eyes.
"The features that we take from our parents are the things that make us different. A big nose, thin lips, high forehead, all the things that the operation takes away."
"The preference toward the mean," his dad said.
Tally nodded, remembering school lessons. The overall average of human facial characteristics was the primary template for the operation.
"Sure, average-looking features are one of the things people look for in a face."
"But families pass on non-average looks, like our big noses."
The man tweaked his son's nose, and David rolled his eyes. Tally realized that David's nose was much bigger than any pretty's. Why hadn't she noticed that before now?
"That's one of the things you give up when you become pretty. The family nose," his mother said. "Why don't you turn up the heat?"
Tally realized that she was still shivering, but not from the cold outside. This was all so weird. She couldn't get over the similarity between David and his father.
"That's okay. It's lovely in here.
Maddie," the woman said, "shall we all sit down?"
Az and Maddie apparently had been expecting them. In the front room of the house, four antique cups were set out on little saucers. Soon a kettle began to whistle softly on an electric heater, and Az poured the boiling water into an antique pot, releasing a floral scent into the room. Tally looked around her. The house was unlike any other in the smoke. It was like a standard crumbly home, filled with impractical objects. A marble statuette stood in one corner, and rich rugs had been hung on the walls, lending their colors to the light in the room, softening the edges of everything. Maddie and Az must have brought a lot of things from the city when they ran away. And unlike uglies, who had only their dorm uniforms and other disposable possessions, the two had actually spent half a lifetime collecting things before escaping the city. Tally remembered growing up surrounded by Saul's woodwork, abstract shapes fashioned from fallen branches she would collect from parks as a litley. Maybe David's childhood hadn't been completely different from her own.
"This all looks so familiar," she said.
"David hasn't told you?" Maddie said. "Az and I come from the same city as you. If we'd stayed, we might have been the ones to turn you pretty."
"Oh, I guess so," Tally murmured. If they'd stayed in the city, there would have been no smoke, and Shay never would have run away.
"David says you made it all the way here on your own," Maddie said.
She nodded. "I was following a friend of mine. She left me directions.
And you decided to come alone?
Couldn't you wait for David to come around again?
There wasn't time to wait, David explained. She left the night before her 16th birthday.
That's leaving things until the last minute,
Az said.
But very dramatic,
Maddie said approvingly.
Actually, I didn't have much choice. I hadn't even heard of the smoke until Shay, my friend, told me she was leaving. That was about a week before my birthday.
Shay, I don't believe we've met her,
Az said. Tally looked at David, who shrugged. He'd never brought Shay here? She wondered for a moment what had really gone on between David and Shay.
You certainly made up your mind quickly then, Maddie said.
Tally brought her mind back to the present. I had to. I only had one chance.
Spoken like a true smoky,
Az said, pouring a dark liquid from the kettle into the cups.
Tea?
Please.
Tally accepted a saucer and felt the scalding heat through the thin white material of the cup. Realizing that this was one of those smoky concoctions that burned your tongue, she sipped carefully. Her face twisted at the bitter taste.
Sorry. I've never had tea before, actually.
As his eyes widened.
Really? But it was very popular back when we lived there.
I've heard of it, but it's more of a crumbly drink. Mostly only late pretties drink it.
Tally willed herself not to blush.
Maddie laughed. Well, we're pretty crumbly, so I guess it's okay for us.
Speak for yourself, my dear.
Try this, David said.
He dropped a white cube into Tally's tea. The next time she drank, a sweetness had spread through it, cutting the bitterness. It was possible to sip the stuff now without grimacing.
David's told you a little about us, I suppose, Maddie said.
Well, he said you ran away a long time ago, before he was born.
Oh, did he?
Az said. The expression on his face was exactly like David's when a member of the railroad crew did something thoughtless and dangerous with a vibrasaw.
I didn't tell her everything, Dad, David said. Just that I grew up in the wild.
You left the rest to us, Az said a bit stiffly. Very good of you.
David held his father's gaze.
Tally came here to make sure her friend was okay. All the way here, alone. But she might not want to stay.
We don't force anyone to live here, Maddie said.
That's not what I mean, David said. I think she should know before she decides about going back to the city.
Tally looked from David to his parents, quietly amazed. The way they communicated was so strange, not like uglies and crumblies at all. It was more like uglies arguing, like equals.
I should know what?
She asked softly. They all looked at her, Maddie and Az measuring her with their eyes.
The big secret,
Az said.
The one that made us run away almost 20 years ago.
One we usually keep to ourselves, Maddie said evenly, her eyes on David.
Tally deserves to know, David said,
his eyes locked with his mother's.
She'll understand how important it is.
She's a kid. A city kid.
She made it here, alone,
with only a bunch of gibberish directions to guide her.
Maddie scowled.
You've never even been to a city, David. You have no idea how coddled they are. They spend their whole lives in a bubble. She survived alone for 9 days, Mom. Made it through a brush fire.
Please, you two, Az interjected. She is sitting right here, aren't you, Tally?
Yeah, I am, Tally said quietly. And I wish you'd tell me what you're talking about. I'm sorry, Tally, Maddie said, but this secret is very important and very dangerous.
Tally nodded her head, looking down at the floor. Everything out here is dangerous. They were all silent for a moment. All Tally heard was the tinkle of Az stirring his tea.
See, David said finally, she understands. You can trust her. She deserves to know the truth.
Everyone does, Maddie said quietly. Eventually.
Well, Az said, then paused to sip his tea. I suppose we'll have to tell you, Tally.
Tell me what?
David took a deep breath.
The truth about being pretty.
Pretty Minds.
We were doctors,
Az began.
Cosmetic surgeons, to be precise, Maddie said. We've both performed the operation hundreds of times, and when we met, I had just been named to the Committee for Morphological Standards.
Tally's eyes widened. The Pretty Committee? Maddie smiled at the nickname.
We were preparing for a morphological congress. That's when all the cities shared data on the operation.
Tally nodded. Cities worked very hard to stay independent of one another. But the Pretty Committee was a global institution that made sure pretties were all more or less the same. It would ruin the whole point of the operation if the people from one city wound up prettier than everyone else. Like most uglies, Tally had often indulged the fantasy that one day she might be on the committee and help decide what the next generation would look like. In school, of course, they always managed to make it sound really boring. All graphs and averages and measuring people's pupils when they looked at different faces.
At the same time, I was doing some independent research on anesthesia,
Az said,
trying to make the operation safer.
Safer? Tally asked.
A few people still die each year, as with any surgery, he said. From being unconscious so long, more than anything else.
Tally bit her lip. She'd never heard that. Oh.
I found that there were complications from the anesthetic used in the operation. Tiny lesions in the brain. Barely visible, even with the best machines.
Tally decided to risk sounding stupid. What's a lesion?
Basically, it's a bunch of cells that don't look right,
Az said,
like a wound or a cancer or just something that doesn't belong there.
But you couldn't just say that,
David said. He rolled his eyes toward Tally.
Doctors.
Maddie ignored her son.
When Az showed me his results, I started investigating. The local committee had millions of scans in its database, not the stuff they put in medical textbooks, but raw data from pretties all over the world. The lesions turned up everywhere.
Tally frowned. You mean people were sick?
They didn't seem to be, and the lesions weren't cancerous because they didn't spread. Almost everyone had them, and they were always in exactly the same place.
She pointed to a spot on the top of her head.
A bit to the left, dear,
Az said, dropping a white cube into his tea. Maddie obliged him, then continued.
Most importantly, almost everyone all over the world had these lesions. If they were a health hazard, 99% of the population would show some kind of symptom.
But they weren't natural? Tally asked.
No, only post-ops, pretties, I mean, had them,
Az said.
No uglies did. They were definitely a result of the operation.
Tally shifted in her chair. The thought of a weird little mystery in everyone's brain made her queasy.
Did you find out what caused them?
Maddie sighed.
In one sense, we did. Az and I looked very closely at all the negatives, that is, the few pretties who didn't have the lesions, and tried to figure out why they were different. What made them immune to the lesions? We ruled out blood type, gender, physical size, intelligence factors, genetic markers. Nothing seemed to account for the negatives. They weren't any different from everyone else.
Until we discovered an odd coincidence,
Az said.
Their jobs, Maddie said.
Jobs?
Every negative worked in the same sort of profession,
Az said.
Firefighters, wardens, doctors, politicians, and anyone who worked for special circumstances. Everyone with those jobs didn't have the lesions. All the other pretties did.
So you guys were okay? Az nodded.
We tested ourselves and we were negative.
Otherwise, we wouldn't be sitting here, Maddie said quietly.
What do you mean? David spoke up.
The lesions aren't an accident, Tally. They're part of the operation, just like all the bone sculpting and skin scraping. It's part of the way being pretty changes you.
But you said not everyone has them.
Maddie nodded.
In some pretties, they disappear or are intentionally cured. In those whose professions require them to react quickly, like working in an emergency room or putting out a fire, those who deal with conflict and danger.
People who face challenges, David said.
Tally let out a slow breath, remembering her trip to the smoke.
What about rangers?
Az nodded.
I believe I had a few rangers in my database. All negatives.
Tally remembered the look on the faces of the rangers who'd saved her. They had an unfamiliar confidence and surety, like David's, completely different from the new pretties she and Paris had always made fun of.
Paris.
Tally swallowed, tasting something more bitter than tea in the back of her throat. She tried to remember how Paris had acted when she'd crashed the Garbo Mansion party. She'd been so ashamed of her own face, it was hard to remember anything specific about Paris. He'd looked so different, and, if anything, he seemed older, more mature. But in some way they hadn't connected. It was as if he'd become a different person. Was it only because since his operation they'd lived in different worlds? Or had it been something more? She tried to imagine Paris coping out here in the smoke, working with his hands and making his own clothes.
The old, ugly Paris would have enjoyed the challenge. But what about pretty Paris? Her head felt light, as if the house were in an elevator heading swiftly downward. What do the lesions do? She asked.
We don't know exactly,
As said.
But we've got some pretty good ideas,
David said. Just suspicions, Maddie said. As looked uncomfortably down into his tea. You were suspicious enough to run away, Tally said.
We had no choice, Maddie said. Not long after our discovery, special circumstances paid a visit. They took our data and told us not to look any further, or we'd lose our licenses. It was either run away or forget everything we'd found.
And it wasn't something we could forget,
As said. Tally turned to David. He sat beside his mother, grim-faced, his cup of tea untouched before him. His parents were still reluctant to say everything they suspected. But she could tell that David saw no need for caution. What do you think? She asked him.
Well, you know all about how the Rusties lived, right?
He said.
War and crime and all that?
Of course, they were crazy. They almost destroyed the world.
And that convinced people to pull the cities back from the wild, to leave nature alone,
David recited.
And now everybody's happy, because everyone looks the same. They're all pretty. No more Rusties, no more war, right?
Yeah. In school, they say it's all really complicated, but that's basically the story. He smiled grimly.
Maybe it's not so complicated. Maybe the reason war and all that other stuff went away is that there are no more controversies, no disagreements, no people demanding change. Just masses of smiling pretties and a few people left to run things.
Tally remembered crossing the river to New Pretty Town, watching them have their endless fun. She and Paris used to boast they'd never wind up so idiotic, so shallow. But when she'd seen him, becoming pretty doesn't just change the way you look, she said.
No, David said. It changes the way you think.
Burning Bridges. They stayed up late into the night, talking with Az and Maddie about their discoveries, their escape into the wild, and the founding of the smoke. Finally, Tally had to ask the question that had been on her mind since she'd first seen them. So, how did you two change yourselves back? I mean, you were pretty, and now you're...
Ugly?
Az smiled.
That part was simple. We're experts in the physical part of the operation. When surgeons sculpt a pretty face, we use a special kind of smart plastic to shape the bones. When we change new pretties to middle or late, we add a trigger chemical to that plastic and it becomes softer, like clay.
Ew, Tally said, imagining her face suddenly softening so she could squish it around to a different shape.
With daily doses of this trigger chemical, the plastic will gradually melt away and be absorbed into the body. Your face goes back to where it started, more or less.
Tally's eyebrows rose. More or less?
We can only approximate the places where a bone was shaved away, and we can't make big changes like someone's height without surgery. Maddie and I have all the non-cosmetic benefits of the operation. Impervious teeth, perfect vision, disease resistance. But we look pretty close to the way we would have without the operation. As far as the fat that was sucked out...
He patted his stomach.
That proves very easy to replace.
But why? Why would you want to be ugly? You were doctors, so there was nothing wrong with your brains, right?
Our minds are fine, Maddie answered. But... we wanted to start a community of people who didn't have the lesions. People who were free of pretty thinking. It was the only way to see what difference the lesions really made. That meant we had to gather a group of uglies. Young people, recruited from the cities.
Tally nodded. So you had to become ugly, too. Otherwise, who'd trust you?
We refined the trigger chemical, created a once-a-day pill. Over a few months, our old faces came back.
Maddie looked at her husband with a twinkle in her eye. It was a fascinating process, actually.
It must have been, Tally said.
What about the lesions? Can you create a pill that cures them?
They were both silent for a moment. Then Maddie shook her head.
We didn't find any answers before special circumstances showed up. Az and I are not brain specialists. We've worked on the question for 20 years without success. But here in the smoke, we've seen the difference that staying ugly makes.
I've seen that myself, Tally said, thinking of the differences between Paris and David.
Az raised an eyebrow.
You catch on pretty fast, then.
But we know there's a cure, David said.
How?
There has to be, Maddie said. Our data showed that everyone has the lesions after their first operation. So when someone winds up in a challenging line of work, the authorities somehow cure them. The lesions are removed secretly, maybe even fixed with a pill like the bone plastic, and the brain returns to normal. There must be a simple cure.
You'll find it one day, David said quietly.
We don't have the right equipment, Maddie said, sighing. We don't even have a pretty human subject to study.
But hang on, Tally said. You used to live in a city full of pretties. When you became doctors, your lesions went away. Didn't you notice that you were changing?
Maddie shrugged. Of course we did. We were learning how the human body worked and how to face the huge responsibility of saving lives. But it didn't feel as if our brains were changing. It felt like growing up.
Oh, but when you looked around at everyone else, how come you didn't notice they were brain damaged?
Az smiled. We didn't have much to compare our fellow citizens with, only a few colleagues who seemed different from most people, more engaged. But that was hardly a surprise. History would indicate that the majority of people have always been sheep. Before the operation, there were wars and mass hatred and clear-cutting. Whatever these lesions make us, it isn't a far cry from the way humanity was in the Rusty era. These days were just a bit easier to manage.
Having the lesions is normal now, Maddie said. We're all used to the effects.
Tally took a deep breath, remembering Saul and Ellie's visit. Her parents had been so sure of themselves, and yet, in a way, so clueless. But they'd always seemed that way, wise and confident, and at the same time disconnected from whatever ugly real-life problems Tally was having. Was that pretty brain damage?
Tally'd always thought that was just how parents were supposed to be. For that matter, shallow and self-centered was how brand new pretties were supposed to be. As an ugly, Paris had made fun of them. But he hadn't waited a moment to join in the fun. No one ever did. So how could you tell how much was the operation and how much was just people going along with the way things had always been? Only by making a whole new world, which is just what Maddie and Az had begun to do. Tally wondered which had come first, the operation or the lesions. Was becoming pretty just the bait to get everyone under the knife? Or were the lesions merely a finishing touch on being pretty? Perhaps the logical conclusion of everyone looking the same was everyone thinking the same. She leaned back in her chair. Her eyes were blurry, and her stomach clenched whenever she thought about Paris, her parents, and every other pretty she'd ever met. How different were they? She wondered. How did it feel to be pretty? What was it really like behind those big eyes and exquisite features?
You look tired, David said.
She laughed softly. It seemed like weeks since she and David had arrived there. A few hours of conversation had changed her world. Maybe a little.
I guess we'd better go, Mom.
Of course, David. It's late, and Tally has a lot to digest. Maddie and Az stood, and David helped Tally up from the chair. She said goodbye to them in a daze, flinching inside when she recognized the expression in their old and ugly faces. They felt sorry for her. Sad that she'd had to learn the truth. Sad that they'd been the ones to tell her. After 20 years, maybe they'd gotten used to the idea. But they still understood that it was a horrible fact to learn. 99% of humanity had had something done to their brains. And only a few people in the world knew exactly what.
You see why I wanted you to meet my parents?
Yeah, I guess I do. Tally and David were in the darkness, climbing the ridge back toward the smoke, the sky full of stars now that the moon had set.
You might have gone back to the city not knowing.
Tally shivered, realizing how close she'd come so many times. In the library, she'd actually opened the pendant, almost holding it to her eye. And if she had, the specials would have arrived within hours.
I couldn't stand that, David said.
But some uglies must go back, right?
Sure, they get bored with camping out, and we can't make them stay.
You let them go? When they don't even know what the operation really means?
David stopped and took hold of Tally's shoulder, anguish on his face.
Neither do we. And what if we told everyone what we suspect? Most of them wouldn't believe us, but others would go charging back to the city to rescue their friends, and eventually the cities would find out what we were saying and would do everything in their power to hunt us down.
They already are,
Tally said to herself.
She wondered how many other spies the specials had blackmailed into looking for the smoke. How many times they'd come close to finding it. She wanted to tell David what they were up to, but how? She couldn't explain that she'd come here as a spy, or David would never trust her again.
She sighed. That would be the perfect way to stop herself from coming between him and Shay.
You don't look very happy.
Tally tried to smile. David had shared his biggest secret with her. She should tell him hers. But she wasn't brave enough to say the words. It's been a long night, that's all. He smiled back.
Don't worry. It won't last forever.
Tally wondered how long it was until dawn. In a few hours, she'd be eating breakfast alongside Shay and Croy, and everyone else she'd almost betrayed, almost condemned to the operation. She flinched at the thought.
Hey, David said, lifting her chin with his palm. You did great tonight. I think my parents were impressed.
Huh? With me?
Of course, Tally. You understood immediately what this all means. Most people can't believe it at first. They say the authorities would never be so cruel.
She smiled grimly. Don't worry. I believe it.
Exactly. I've seen a lot of city kids come through here. You're different from the rest of them. You can see the world clearly, even if you did grow up spoiled. That's why I had to tell you. That's why...
Tally looked into his eyes and saw that his face was glowing again, touching her in that pretty way she'd felt before.
That's why you're beautiful, Tally.
The words made her dizzy for a moment, like the falling feeling of looking into a new pretty's eyes.
Me? Yes.
She laughed, shaking her head clear.
What, with my thin lips and my eyes too close together? Tally, and my frizzy hair and squashed-down nose? Don't say that.
His fingers brushed her cheeks where the scratches were almost healed and ran fleetingly across her lips. She knew how calloused his fingertips were, as hard and rough as wood. But somehow, their caress felt soft and tentative.
That's the worst thing they do to you. To any of you. Whatever those brain lesions are all about, the worst damage is done before they even pick up the knife. You're all brainwashed into believing you're ugly.
We are. Everyone is.
So, you think I'm ugly?
She looked away. It's a pointless question. It's not about individuals.
Yes, it is, Tally. Absolutely.
I mean, no one can really be... You see, biologically, there are certain things we all... The words choked off. You really think I'm beautiful?
Yes.
More beautiful than Shay? They both stood silent, their mouths gaping. The question had popped out of Tally before she could think. How had she uttered something so horrible? I'm sorry. David shrugged, turned away.
It's a fair question. Yes, I do.
Do what?
I think you're more beautiful than Shay.
He said it so matter-of-factly, as if talking about the weather. Tally's eyes closed, every bit of exhaustion from the long day crashing into her at once. She saw Shay's face, too thin, eyes too far apart, and an awful feeling welled up inside her. The warmth she'd felt from David was crushed by it. Every day of her life, she'd insulted other uglies and had been insulted in return. Fatty, pig eyes, bony, zits, freak. All the names uglies called one another, eagerly and without reserve. But equally, without exception, so that no one felt shut out by some irrelevant mischance of birth, and
no one was considered to be even remotely beautiful, privileged because of a random twist in their genes. That was why they'd made everyone pretty in the first place. This was not fair. Don't say that. Please.
You asked me.
She opened her eyes. But it's horrible. It's wrong.
Listen, Tally, that's not what's important to me. What's inside you matters a lot more.
But first you see my face. You react to symmetry, skin tone, the shape of my eyes, and you decide what's inside me based on all your reactions. You're programmed to.
I'm not programmed.
I didn't grow up in a city.
It's not just culture. It's evolution.
He shrugged in defeat, the anger draining from his voice.
Maybe some of it is.
He chuckled tiredly.
But you know what first got me interested in you?
Tally took a deep breath, trying to calm herself.
What?
The scratches on your face.
She blinked. The what?
These scratches.